Hey, fellow mathers, do you have limited classroom time? Do you want to make the biggest, best impact on your students that you can? Then you need to start here with the Math is Figureoutable Challenge.
It's 3 1-hour sessions of the quickest and most powerful ways to reach the most students with the most math. We're having special guest Jenna Laib. Mark your calendars for May 15th through 17th at 7 p.m. Central and watch this space to find out when registration opens.
If you can't make those times, you'll want to register anyway so you can get access to the session recordings. And now, on to the episode. Hey, fellow mathematicians. Welcome to the podcast where math is figure-outable. I'm Pam.
And I'm Kim.
And you found a place where math is not about memorizing and mimicking, where you're waiting to be told or shown what to do. But it's about diving in, making sense of problems, noticing patterns, and reasoning using mathematical relationships. We can mentor students to think and reason like mathematicians. Not only are algorithms not particularly helpful in teaching mathematics, but rotely repeating steps actually keeps students from being the mathematicians they can be.
Today's Halloween.
Whoa.
I know, right?
Are you serious?
Yeah. So
Which really means this is going to launch on Halloween.
Well,
today is actually not Halloween.
Yeah. It's pretty darn close, but I have to tell you, every like Halloween, my sister-in-law will send me a picture of one of my kids when he was teeny tiny, like maybe not even two, in my very favorite Halloween costume of all time. He was a monster, little green monster. He had little big fluffy fat. Oh, I mean, just every time, like I could squeeze the heck out of him.
What was
your kid's favorite costume?
Did they
trick or treat?
My children always wanted to be something yucky, like gory. Violent.
No.
Well, so it's interesting. Should I say this? So as adults, they're all still, fascinated with the macabre.
Okay.
Like I have a son that is a vampire.
And
I have one that's a werewolf, and I'm not even going to talk about the other two.
Okay.
Not that they're worse, but I don't even know what they are. I have a daughter-in-law that's fixated on Halloween. In fact, there was talk that the baby shower's theme was going to be Halloween.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was a little fantastic that her mom is the one that was like, no, we're not having a baby shower. That was,
it's like a big deal in your family. I had no idea.
Well, what's funny is it's not for me.
Oh yeah.
And you know, is it because I didn't, as little kids, I would not let them be something violent or gory. And so it's almost like, don't do that, parents. Let them get it out when they're tiny. When they grow up, it's like, okay.
Well, mine was a green and bright blue dotted little tiny baby monster with feet.
I let them be ninjas. I want to say it. That would be super. Your kids were super cute when they were.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Happy Halloween, everybody, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we are on episode 176. And when you and I started talking about this and decided what we were going to chat about today, do you remember I asked you what the number was? I was really hoping it was 175. 176 is a stupid number. It is not nearly as fun. 175 is amazing.
You just called it a stupid number.
I did. There's nothing fantastic about 175, particularly about what we're going to talk about today. So today,
I know why you'd like 175, because you like quarters so much.
I do.
Okay, so that's why. But see, 176 is just one off of that number.
It's not as good.
Stupid. You call
it stupid. Well, okay. So today we are going to talk about place value.
And I don't know.
I like 175 for place value.
Well, I think we can play with 176 for place value.
Let's play a little bit.
So, all right. If place value, Kim, if I were to say 176, what do people typically do with if you hear place value and you hear the number 176, what do we typically see in like a third grade classroom?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So they'll talk about how that's 176.
176. And they might say it's 107 tens and 6.
Oh,
one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Either way. And so they kind of break the number up in place value. And you're like, Pam, that's what place value means.
Yep.
But let's play a little bit. So, Kim, if I were to say how many ones are in 176, I think we might have some third grade kids that say 6.
Yeah. For sure.
And I wonder if you agree with that. How many ones are in 176?
There are 176 ones. 176.
And how would you, maybe I'll just say it.
If you were going to build that number, you would need 176 ones.
Sure enough. And if I was to give you $176, could I do that with $176 bills?
I'll take it.
I could, right? Yeah. And then you might say, hey, can we switch that out a little bit? And then we might do some like bigger bills that represent more numbers. So hopefully everybody would agree that so depending on how you ask the question, if I ask the question, given that there's 107 tens, how many ones are left over? Then the answer could be six. But if the question is how many ones are in 176, careful teachers that you don't say six.
Yeah.
Because that's not correct. There's 176 ones. Yeah. Okay. How many tens are in 176? Kim, would you agree with me that many third grade kids would say there are seven tens in 176?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But I think if I were to ask you, you would say how 17. Many tens?
There's 17. Yeah, 17.6.
Oh, there's 17.6 tens.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I didn't finish. 17.6.
And how do you reason that there's 17.6 tens in 176?
Because 17 tens is 170.
170.
And, and 0.6 of a 10 is 6 tenths of a 10, which is 6.
Cool. So one way, if I said how many tens, you could say there's 17.6. Another way you could say that is there's 17 tens and 6 ones left over.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a remainder feel for that.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. How many hundreds? Did I do everything I wanted to do with tens? I think I did. Yeah, I think so. How many hundreds? What do you think an average third grade kid might say?
Oh, actually, I want to say something about the tens.
Yeah, I feel like there's something we didn't say. Yeah.
Some like early third grade, I think I would be okay with there's 17 tens and some left over.
Yeah, yeah. I think we need both of those.
I said 17.6. But what I don't want is 7 tens. But I'm happy when they recognize 17 tens.
So if a student were to say there's 100 and I've already taken care of that and now there's 7 tens and there's 6 ones, then we're okay with that. But be careful how you ask that question because if you say how many tens?
17.
There's not just 7, there's 17. Yep. Yeah. All right. So how many 100s are in 176?
There's one whole 100, but if I wanted to be more precise. So
do the leftover first. There's one whole 100.
There's 100. One whole and 0.7600. So 1/76 of 100. Yeah. And it's interesting to me because I actually wrote what I wrote on my paper was different based on the question that you asked me.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah.
So when I said do the leftover one, I actually meant kind of the remainder thing.
Oh, okay. So 100 and a remainder of 76.
And there's like 76 other stuff, other things, but there's one 100. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. We probably should have had this be like 476. So we could have said there's 400s and then there's those remainder kind of things or 4.76 hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's kind of hard to say. So here's a question that we don't usually ask. And I'm not suggesting we ask this in third grade, but maybe in fourth grade. How many tenths are there in 176? Like 0.1. How many?
Yeah.
0.1 tenths. How many
there one are. Tenths? 1,760 tenths.
How do you know?
I actually went back to how many ones there were. Mm-hmm. And I knew that there were 176 ones. And there are 10 tenths in each one. So I needed 10 times as many as the 176 ones.
And 10 times 176 is?
Yeah, 1,760.
Yeah, that makes sense. Nice. Another way that I was kind of thinking about it, because I was wondering how we could think about this, is how many dimes are in $176, which I would probably do the same kind of reasoning you just did. How many dimes are in a dollar?
Yeah. So but the context is helpful.
Yeah, I would hope so. And so then could we also ask how many hundredths and could we ask how many pennies?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then we could go from there. Cool.
Yeah.
So in the title, I think we have exploding dots. So Kim... Exploding dots. What do you know about exploding dots?
Don't tell us everything.
I
have just a little bit of experience. And we actually recently did some interviewing with students and had a student sharing with us about exploding dots. And I didn't know tons, but I did some more looking. I know that it is about thinking about the value of the number. I know that it's about thinking a little bit more about some equivalence, and the point perhaps is to consider like a little bit more reasoning about adding or subtracting, and that it doesn't have to necessarily be traditional. But I also feel like what I've seen from a lot of students is that they get stuck in some drawing. So you probably know a lot more than I do about exploding dots.
Yeah. So what you've seen is kind of students' interpretations of teachers' interpretations of James Tanton's work.
Yeah, the after effect.
Yeah.
Right?
So James Tanton is a mathematician from Australia. He does some amazing things. I think he's kind of funny. He's snarky. So Kim, I think you would enjoy
the board he writes on is cool.
The board he writes on is super cool. Yeah. I want one of those really bad. My team keeps telling me no. I'm like, come on, I want a board like that. So he, it's great. I heard him live before he had kind of gotten super big, and now he has a kind of a cool website with lots of exploding dots things. And as if you listen to his now recorded stuff on his exploding dots things on his website, he clearly says at the beginning that if this story was true, when I was a boy, and then he goes off to talk about how he thought about things as a boy. But he clearly says at the beginning, if this story was true. I thought that was awesome because the first time I heard him, I actually thought it was true. And he probably said if at that point as well. But I definitely heard everything else he said is like, wow, he really thought about numbers this way as a kid. But he clearly does some very nice things to help us think about our base 10 place value system. Mm-hmm. And maybe I could even say not even base 10. He helps us think about what a place value system is. So, for example, if you were thinking about Roman numerals, that is not a place value system. Roman numerals is a very additive system where you have to know the symbol for the amount that you're talking about. So if you're talking about 3, then you draw the 3 little I's, like the letter I, and you count those, and that stands for 3. But if you want to represent 4, then they had this, or maybe I'll just go to 5. And that was a V, and V represents 5, and an X represents 10. And you had to, now that's similar to our number system where we have symbols. Mm-hmm. Like the numeral 3 represents 3 and the numeral 4 represents 4. But their symbols only represented certain numbers. And to get, so like 3, they didn't have one symbol to represent 3. They used the symbol for 1, the I, and you had to have 3 of them. So that's why it's additive. I had to add those 3 together. And if I was to represent the number 6, I needed the symbol for 5, the V, and the symbol for 1, the I, and I would put those together and I would add them then. So similarly, if I was to get 12, I would use a symbol for 10, the X, and then I would put 2 next to it. People are like, why are we talking about Roman numerals? Because those other numeration systems kept us from being able to develop more mathematics. When the Hindu-Arabic numerals came along and the place value system came along, when we developed that as humanity, all of a sudden, in a relatively quicker fashion, we were able to do much more mathematics because of the place value system. So our place value system is very important. Our place value system says if I put a digit, a numeral, in a place, it represents a different magnitude than it does in a different place. So if I put the numeral 3 in the ones place, it represents 3 ones. But if I put the numeral 3 in the tens place, it represents 3 tens. That's multiplicative. Now I'm thinking about 3 times 10 because it's in the tens place. That's a multiplication sentence. Then I add those together. So if I, what was the number we're messing around with? 176?
Mm-hmm.
So I've got 100 and I've got 7 tens, sevens in the tens place. I've got, so there's the 70 comes from, that's multiplicative. And then the 6 in the ones place. And then I add those together. But the multiplicative nature that's happening in that place is cognitively difficult. Mm-hmm. That takes some understanding. I'll give you an example of when I realized quite how difficult it was and I was smiling. When my youngest, my daughter, came home one day and she goes, hey, mom, is 12 a one number or a two number?
Yes.
I'll never forget that day. And yes. I was like, oh man, she is grappling with what it means to have two symbols represent a number right? Because all the way up through 9, it's one symbol representing a number. And now all of a sudden you have two symbols representing a number, 10, 1 and 0. What does that mean? Why do you have two symbols representing a number? So is 12 a one number or a two number? Ah, it's brilliant.
Such a great question. Yeah.
Just grappling with our place value system. So I'm not going to spend too much more time on that today. I am going to say that I think he does an amazing job of, so exploding dots is where he says, if I have 10 ones, I could stick them together and he moves them over and they become 110. And if I have 10 tens, then I stick those together and move those over and they become 100. Well, how are they exploding? Well, what if I take that 100 and I move it back into the tens? And he even goes, pow, choo, bang, bang. And that 100 explodes into 10 tens. And I could take one of those tens, and if I move it over into the ones, boom, bam, bing, it explodes into the number of ones. Sorry, James, if I'm not doing you justice here. I think he does a great job in helping us understand the place value system and our base 10 system. What I'm not as interested in is that then he goes on, I shouldn't even say then, also, because it's not really, I'm not trying to say this in order. He also helps us understand other place value system in other bases. I shouldn't say other place value systems with other bases. So our place value system, we use base 10. He and many other mathy people have decided that a good way to help us understand our place value system is to do other bases, not just hang around in the base 10 system. And so he does work with base 2 and base 3 and exchanges. And then he does work saying, all right, with base 10. And he says, now that we understand our place value system and ours is base 10, hey, check out how the algorithms work. And he does quite a bit of work, and I would say way too much work, in understanding the algorithms. Because I would suggest, maybe not James, because I don't know him and haven't talked to him about it, but teachers hear that as, therefore, our job now is to use exploding dots to have kids add, subtract, multiply, and divide.
Yeah, and now, that's the experience I've been seeing.
Yeah, and we see kids then, oh, this is what I must do. I must now draw these dots and circle them together and make the higher thing. And it becomes a whole lot of counting by ones and a whole lot of reading off the answer. And those are two flags for me that say, if we're supposed to be adding and I'm counting by ones, we're using less sophisticated thinking. Flag, flag, red flag, red flag. If we are reading off the answer, thank you, Kathy Fosno, for this tip that if you're reading off the answer, you're probably not mathing. You're probably repeating something real memorized. And so two red flags that say, I'm not so interested. So let me be clear. I think he does a great job in helping us develop place value systems. I'm not so interested in then taking that into why the algorithms work. And I'm not so interested in taking that into other bases, at least not for most students. Yeah.
Yeah. We've seen that as well in schools, right? Where some of the classes do a couple of weeks of units in other bases. And for me, it's a little bit like, I want that time to explore more deeply in our base system.
We have a lot to do in our base 10, right?
Yeah.
We have a lot to develop in our base 10. And I think Kim, you and I would agree, we can do what we need to do with most students in base 10, spending that time really understanding base 10, that we don't then need to spend all this other time in other bases. And I know I hear people, I can see your face right now, listeners, where you're like, no, Pam, like I really understood blank in my pre-service methods class where we had to mess around with other bases. May I invite you to consider, what is it exactly that your aha was? And I'm going to bet your aha might have been about the base, the place value system, but I bet it was more about why the algorithms work the way they do. Mm-hmm. And if that was your aha, I'm going to ask you to consider, is our goal the algorithms? No. And so since our goal is not the algorithm, I love that you had that aha. Yay, good moment that you had the aha. We don't need that aha. We need other more important ahas to get kids really mathing. Kim, you would agree?
Yeah. And well, I would also say that probably their experience is what we're saying is not a rich experience of 176 is 176. We need so much more than that.
Absolutely.
That's the richness of place value that we really are going for.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm not dogging James Tanton at all. I'm just going to de-emphasize a lot of his later, I should say his later work, because he does a lot of work, not just in Exploding Dots, but in Exploding Dots, if you want to use Exploding Dots, use it to develop relationships, yep. to talk about what it means to have a place value system. But I would suggest for most students, stay in base 10. If you really want to, and you have a group of students that are ready for an extension, sure, go ahead and go play in other bases. But that's not the goal. It's an extension. It's to play with. I think our goal is to get good at base 10. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So let's play a little bit how we would kind of play maybe with some numbers.
Okay.
Kim, try how it. Would you play with the number 3,872? What's the first thing that comes to mind for you? It's okay. Looking for a right answer here.
Okay. Whatever. So anything, because yep. I don't know what you want. So I'm going to say the first thing that comes to mind for me is that it's 28 away from 3,900.
I love it.
did you think I'd say that?
No, I wasn't sure what you were going to say. Okay, I love that you did that. Yeah. So 3,872 is 28 from 3,900.
Yeah.
Do you also play then how far it is from 4,000?
I haven't, because then the next thing that I wanted to write down was that it's 8 away from 3,880. Mm-hmm. But yes, then the next place I would have probably gone is that how far away from 4,000, and that's 128 away.
I'm super curious to let you play a little bit more. Any other playing you want to do?
I kind of want to think about 10,000, which would be 6,128. So I could change my end goal, right? Like, so partners. So let's see. What else do I want to do? We already did the ones. That's 3,872 ones. It's 387.2 tens. I could keep going kind of either direction there.
Okay, keep going. How about hundreds? How many hundreds?
So that's 38.72 hundreds.
Didn't interrupt.
So same, I could thousands.
So stay with 100, right? If you don't mind, stay with hundreds for a second.
Yeah.
So when you just said 38 and then you went to the, I'm kind of ignore the extras for a second.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's interesting that 3,800 also has the name 3,800.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So go back to tens for a second if you can. I know we're shifting a little bit. So how many tens did you say? And maybe do it as an
387. Extras. 387 tens.
With two extras. Okay. Yep. So in 3,872, there are 387 tens.
Mm-hmm.
Where was I going? I just forgot.
Because you can say 3,800s, but you don't say.
Oh, yeah. Why do we call the number? I'll let you finish the sentence.
Go well, ahead. I mean, it's silly to us that we wouldn't say 387 tens as a way to describe that number. We say 3,800.
Yeah. And you might be like, why do we say 3,800 and 3,800? And I don't know, but I'm suggesting that we could also acknowledge that if we had the number 3,870, that we could call that 387 tens.
We do with thousands too. We say 3,000s. 3,000.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and then, if we extended that up, let's say that we had the number 13,872.
Yeah.
Could we talk about the number? Do we call that 1,300s? We don't. We call that 13,000s. Because we're in that place, right? It's 13,872. So there's a place where we actually, I don't know how to say what I'm trying to say, where the thing that it is, we're calling it that.
Go ahead.
We're not calling it 3,872.
Yeah, it's 13,000.
That's the break I'm trying to make.
It sounds like you're challenging the listeners to join in your movement to start calling tens 387 tens. I've heard you say that before.
Yeah, absolutely.
You want to start a movement? Let's call things what they are,
so that we get a little bit more flexible. So that when we say the number 3,872, we get things like all of Kim's partners, but we also get different place values, mm-hmm. and we don't just get the standard place value separation that we get expanded notation. That we don't just get that, but we play maybe with a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right, Kim, I'm going to suggest that there are some takeaways. What are you thinking?
For sure that we need to broaden the question that we're asking students. It's not enough to just say, 170 and 6.
The expanded notation question. Yeah, that's not enough.
That's not enough. Nope. Yeah.
So we're also not saying that's evil. It's just not enough.
That's needed too. It's
necessary,
just not
necessary, but not sufficient. Uh-huh.
Yep. So broaden the question that the place value, place labeling, right? I don't know how much you said about place labeling, but
We didn't really talk about that.
That labeling of ones, tens, hundreds is
definitely not enough to develop place value.
No, for sure.
Definitely not. And so all too often we have worksheets out there that just have kids label the places. You give them a number and you just say label the places. Once kids have done that, that's necessary, but it's not sufficient to develop place value. So those two things together is what we typically see is the most that's happening out there. You label places, you do the expanded notation, and then you're kind of done.
Right.
Those are necessary. Don't do so much on them. Do a little bit on them and then do more work trying to get place value done.
Yeah, because it's not doing what people think it's doing, right? It's giving them the names of the places, but it's not creating understanding of value. And so, finally, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, how do we do it, Kim?
Yeah. So, well,
we've told everybody what not to do, what to do.
Yeah. So we hope everyone all over will take the place value mini workshop learn more about place value and how to develop it and your students. You know, this place value workshop is absolutely amazing. So many understandings, so many things that you can turn around in your classroom. It is a small ask time-wise. It's super fantastic.
Yeah, we thought as a team, we sat down and we said to ourselves, what is something that we could create in a mini workshop? We know teachers are busy. We know they only have so much time. We know they have only so many funds. What could we give that would be high impact that all teachers will go, oh, that, yes, we know,
like,
our kids need.
All the grade levels, right? Like this is not just I teach second grade place value type of thing.
Third grade place value, sixth grade place value. Yeah, this affects so much of what we do is to get kids really reasoning using our place value system. So we created Teaching Place Value, and it is a mini workshop. It is intended to take 2 hours about. We would invite you dive in to our mini workshop called Teaching Place Value and learn how to de-emphasize the kinds of things that we talked about today and emphasize building that place value in your students. You and they are going to love it. All right, y'all. Thank you for tuning in and teaching more and more real math. To find out more about the Math is Figureoutable movement, visit mathisfigureoutable.com. Thank you for helping spread the word that math is figureoutable. Thank you for listening and making math more figureoutable.
Remember, we're going to be opening registration for the Math is Figureoutable Challenge soon. Mark your calendar for May 15th through 17th. You are not going to want to miss these free PD evenings where you'll learn 4 routines you need in your classroom that are naturally engaging and encourage students to think mathematically.
And remember, if you can't make those times, registering gets you access to the recordings. Keep making math figureoutable.